The New Hollywood Podcast is brought to you by the Apple TV Plus series Truth Be Told, when new evidence compels podcaster Poppy Parnell to reopen the murder case that made her a national sensation. She comes face to face with the man she may have mistakenly helped to put behind bars. Based on the novel by Kathleen Barber, Truth Be Told provides a unique glimpse into America's obsession with true crime podcasts and challenges its viewers to consider the consequences when the pursuit of justice is placed on a public stage. The drama series stars Octavia Spencer for your Emmy consideration. Visit fyc.appletvplus.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast, At Home Edition. We keep changing that to either quarantine or at home.
It's the same. It's one and the same.
Anyways, I am Amanda Nduka.
And I am Dino Ray Ramos. And this week we have the funny, the talented, the smart, and he's also a handsome guy, Hasan Minhaj of the Patriot Act. And you've seen him on many other things, The Daily Show. He's been in movies, he's been on TV. He broke down so much knowledge for us. He made me feel like I was like in a classroom, but the way he framed a lot of things, how he compared, you know, his culture to Nigerian culture. It was just so fun to like talk with him.
And if you haven't seen The Patriot Act, which is on Netflix, he really takes these issues that are going on in the world, not just, you know, everywhere, and he breaks it down and he gives you an understanding using like, he gives you the foundation of issues, and he gives you an understanding of why things are the way they are. And there's so many things that so many things that he's talked about in that episode that I had no idea. Like we talked about the fast fashion industry and how that has, you know, it's one of the highest growing industries, and it's eating up basically all of our, it's basically not really good for the environment. And I'm a fashion shopper. I didn't even know Zara was considered a fashion place, but
when I worked in fashion, I did like a whole thing. I remember this has been a problem for a long, long time. Like the fashion industry is probably the waste from the fashion industry is out through the roof. It's out of control.
Right.
Like they use so much water as well, because of dyes and everything like that. It's amazing. I mean, it's like, I know fast fashion is easy and everything, but you know, it's just something to marinate on before you go out to like your Forever 21 or H&M and buy something.
Yeah, that's what the show, because fast fashion is just an example, but he did one on student debt. He did one on why the Asian American vote is important. Like, it gives you an understanding of these things. And like I said, these are things that maybe we don't look into in our everyday, you know, our everyday life. But when you watch the show, you see there are things that, you know, that are things to think about. So that's what I really like about the show. And Hasan, he's amazing. Like you said, he breaks it down to an understanding. He's good at this is what I got from watching it. He's good at really making, like, he comes off very personal.
Yeah. It's like, of course he was talking to us one-on-one, but there's something very personal about him, his delivery of information and just the way he does things. I'm just glad to see, you know, a brown face in this kind of role. We seldom see that, and I think he does it so well, and no shade, he does it better than others sometimes, but it's something that I could relate to. So without further ado, here is Hasan.
Hasan, thank you so much for joining us today. So how have you been holding up? Do you guys like that segue?
So, New York got hit pretty bad, especially Manhattan, where the show is based. Around mid-March, things kind of got really, really crazy in Hell's Kitchen, area where we are. An outbreak happened at CBS across the street from our studio, next door in 60 Minutes, and we had to shut down production just for the health and safety of the entire staff. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of had to regroup as a team. Like, everybody had to figure out what our situation was with our families. People, especially in our staff, were really worried about, you know, the health and well-being, not only of their family, but just their financial future.
Right.
And then Prashant and I, while we were figuring things out with Netflix, we put together this idea for a quarantine version of the show. How do we do this with green screen, where we can maintain the visual aesthetic and quality of the show with the research? And how do we have like a complete remote post workflow, which so much of comedy rooms and writing rooms is in person. It was figuring all that out, but this saved me, because I was losing my mind just being at home every day, not knowing what day it was. So luckily the past few weeks I've had a creative outlet, but yeah, I was starting to go a little bonkers.
How has it been? Because you're recording with no audience, and you usually record in front of an audience. Like,
yeah, like, that energy is kind of missing, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I miss most about, you know, not having a live studio audience. So much of the show and the rhythm of the show is that connection. And we've had to adjust that a little bit with the writing. Now, the show very much feels like this visual podcast inside of my house, where I'm just looking directly at camera one and almost just telling you a story. Whereas before, there would be these applause break moments or these moments where I would break and turn to the audience to my left or right and kind of check in with them and be like, isn't that kind of crazy? Now that's just happening.
Yeah.
Camera. But it's not like it's I thought it would be really weird, but it's not a new concept. And I think, you know, you guys also hosting a podcast, you understand the intimacy of the medium. You just lean into that. You know, you know there's not going to be raucous applause or anything like that. So you lean into what you do have, which is just a very, very close connection.
Yeah, and in some ways it's less pressure, right? Like, if a joke doesn't land like you thought it would, it wouldn't, I mean, I don't know if
it's... You just have to kind of, like, throw caution to the wind and, like, hopefully someone out there is laughing, right? It's
interesting. Some people said, they were like, at first I didn't know if I should laugh because there was no audience. Like, there are these cues that watching a live studio show give you, where you feel like, oh, I'm not in the room, but I know the room likes this, you know? And I think, again, people quickly, within a week or two, got over that, because you watch single camera comedies all the time, and you yourself, you know when to laugh. One thing that we did kind of benefit, I'm a person that talks really fast. And because of this new situation that we're in, coincidentally enough, the clarity is, you know, really translating, because you just have my voice. It's not being drowned out by laughs or groans or applause.
Yeah.
So Hassan, I want to take it back with you and talk about your journey throughout this industry. It's always really interesting to talk to immigrants or first generation Americans, and especially that are in entertainment, because a lot of us have the same type of parents, the same type of background, that's not something that was really encouraged. So for you, when you decided to get into comedy, how did your parents, first of all, let me ask you, when did you figure out you were funny? First of all, and how did your parents initially react when you said that you were gonna venture into this world?
So, you know, I'm first generation. My parents are Indian American immigrants. They came here. My dad came here in 1982. He's a chemist. My mom, she studied medicine. Both of them are state employees. My dad worked for the Cali PA for 35 years. My mom still works for the VA at Mather in Sacramento. And
Bay Area.
we're actually not the cool part.
Bay Area, you're Bay Area adjacent.
Capital A adjacent. But their dreams for me were, you know, pre-med. And so I really bought into that. So much of inspiration when it comes to art is when you see other people who look like you, on screen or in media, it not only validates like your existence, but it makes you think that it's possible. And it just didn't really exist at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like a super academic kid, speech and debate kid. And nice. Yeah, I didn't know I was being funny, but whenever I would do impromptu debate, speeches during competitions, anytime I made the judges laugh, they would always give me 10 or 15 points higher on my final marks. Mm-hmm. And again, like, it was just reading the room and breaking the fourth wall and being present, which are so important in comedy, just honesty. And it wasn't until college, my freshman year, I was watching a stand-up special with a friend of mine, and I was watching it with him. It was Chris Rock's Never Scared. It was in 2004. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, this is funny speech and debate. Mm-hmm. He's just confronting an argument. Mm-hmm. But he's doing it in a comedic way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like so many people in college, you know, Daily Show and Jon Stewart and Colbert Report, those became big ways that I learned about the news, and I just kind of expanded my comedy palette from there. But that kind of gave me the bug, and I just started going to open mics and performing and hiding it from my parents.
So, but when you first revealed it, to that, what, when did you let them know that this is what you were doing? Like, how far along were you into it before you told them?
I think about my junior year. Okay. Yeah. And I got caught because I took my car to an open mic. Mm. When I told them, I was at the library, and I ended up getting into an accident. It was raining really hard, and I hydroplaned, and my car hit this divider.
Oh, God.
I was on the side of the road, and I had to call home, and I remember the call. I called my mom, and she did the classic mom thing. She was like, she heard what happened, and she's like, I'm gonna give the phone to your dad. And I knew
that is such a mom thing.
Yeah. Like, she was like, look, I can't, the level of shit you're in right now, there's nothing I can, and I can't carry this burden for you anymore, Hassan. I got to give this to your father.
Oh, God. I think we've all been in that position before, especially
My dad the other day was like, you know, there's a lot of healthcare jobs because of this virus. You know, it's not too late to go to med school. And I'm like,
Amanda, are you Nigerian out of curiosity?
Nigerian, yes.
I knew it. As soon as you said med school, I was like, Nigerians and Indians, our parents are exactly the same.
Yes. It's literally like we have this conversation. I can't even count how many times when I'm, because I'm home now with them in Texas. So I, like, literally, he tells me and my sister, he's like, because my sister is a makeup artist, he's uh-huh. like, you know, it's not too late, because my sister's also, she also got her law, she passed her bar exam, so she's actually an attorney in Texas.
Oh my God.
So he's like, it's not too late to do this. And I'm like, Dad, it is too late. Like, it's not, this is not happening. Give it up. But I believe he's never going to stop.
Nigerians, so. You guys don't play around. Like, every single one of my Nigerian friends that I grew up with, their entire family, all the kids, their starting five are just superstars. It'll be like, this is my brother Ola. He's a civil engineer. This is my sister so-and-so. Like,
family full of doctors, family full of engineers. Everybody has like a professional person like in their family.
So. But they come, it's like, you got to come super correct.
Right, oh, right. God. But it makes sense, because like Nigeria is a third world country. Like,
yeah,
they weren't exposed to the things that we're exposed to. So I get it why they, you know, why they want this for us. But sometimes it's like, okay, but we grew up here. It's not the same. Like, let's try to explore new things and evolve, you know? Yes.
I think like my parents have gotten off my back. I just don't think they care anymore. They're just like, they're just like.
But like from jump, they were just like, just do whatever you want.
Yeah. No, they hated it. They hated everything I did. They're like, oh, you want to be a journalist? But what's the backup plan?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I still get asked about a backup plan too.
Yeah, and then sometimes like, oh, with how things are going, I might as well just lean into the Filipino-ness of it all and become a nurse, you know?
RNs have great work-life balance. The hours,
especially right now, right? Yeah.
No, all my friends back in the Bay Area, they're just like, I like all of them are working like crazy hours, and they're always like exposed to stuff. But it's like, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have just been a nurse. My sister's a nurse. My aunt's a nurse. Yeah, everyone's pretty much a nurse. And then, I mean, it's great. But also, I just read this whole thing about, it was in the LA Times, on why there's so many Filipino nurses.
What is the why? What's the story?
No, that's interesting.
From what I understand, it was basically they outsourced to, like, this is like Cliff Notes version. They outsourced to the Philippines. They're like, oh, let's get all these Filipinos to the United States to work at nurses, pay them half the price, and they're basically custodians. Mm. And it kind of just like went from there. But then,
when was this, like in the 70s and the 80s?
Yeah, I want to say 70s, like maybe 60s, 70s. But yeah, that the article is on LA Times by Frank Shuang, I think is his last name. Sorry, Frank. I know him too, and I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm trash. But no, it's an interesting story.
How do we read the article if we don't have a password to get into the LA Times?
I think it's free, isn't it?
It's not free, Dino.
They did make it free. They took the paywall down for a little bit, but it's probably back up. They took it down for quarantine.
Oh, well, you know what? I'll hook you.
There's four articles that are in the tabs of my Safari browser right now that I'm dying to read, but they're paywall.
How about I'll just cut and paste and then I'll send it to you?
Give me that bootleg control C, control C.
we'll screenshot. We'll do bootlegging newspaper articles is the new pastime during quarantine. You know, at least make them all free. But and plus, like, they, you know, we get them free because we work at deadline for the most part. But sometimes we have to re-log in and I forget the password.
Yeah.
Hassan, you know, from what I notice, or even from personal experience, you know, children of immigrants, you know, growing up, there's like, especially I think in a certain generation, you either really embrace your culture, like really, really embrace it, or you tend to have a difficult time navigating and accepting certain parts of the culture because you're trying to assimilate.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, being from a South Asian family, were you one or the other, a little of both? And how did your personal journey with your cultural identity kind of just feed into your comedy and you know, the decisions you make with your career?
Yeah, so I'm 34. And so growing up in, you know, born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s, early 2000s, especially for me, assimilation was the win, you know, really fitting into what's quote unquote American culture, that really meant you made it. So Americanizing your name, really showing that how much you can be like everybody else, that really was considered to be a good thing. I didn't realize until probably around 2012, 2013, 2014, that all the artists and the people that I really loved and respected are super authentic, and authenticity is what helped them break through. And so right around that point in my career, when I had been doing stand-up about 8-9 years, I was like, this diet version of myself isn't going to work. And I don't think I'm going to be particularly successful going this route. I won't find personal satisfaction from it. And I don't think, I think at some point the audience will also be like, that's not who he really is, you know? And that's really what I've kind of leaned into the past, you know, 6 or 7 years of my career.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I mean, it's just so interesting because there was a time in my life when I would be known as a coconut, you know, that kind of thing. Because of course, and also my dad was in the military. That was his ticket to the United States from the Philippines. So he joined the American military. So I don't know. I've never really had that conversation with my dad because, you know, about, you know, how American he wanted us to be because he was in the military. So I would figure he wanted us to assimilate. And I've always had an interesting kind of take on my own identity. It wasn't until college when I realized, oh wow, I'm different, you know. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, when you were creating Patriot Act, yeah, how did you want it to be different from other current event talk shows? I mean, obviously you insert yourself a lot into it, but mm-hmm. you know, And also, you're probably one of the few brown people who are hosting a show like this. But how, other than that, how did you want to make it stand out?
Yeah, so, you know, being at The Daily Show for the 4 years I was there was an amazing experience. Learning under John and Trevor was awesome. But when you're a correspondent on an ensemble show, you're really servicing the vision of the host. And because, you know, it was linear kind of cable, you're locked into the 7 minute act format. And if you're coming in as a correspondent, that means you're getting maybe like 4 or 5 minutes on any given show, which isn't enough time to unpack a lot of the things that I was really, really passionate about. So it was a great platform to learn about take and perspective and how to break down the news and in global politics. But I remember just telling myself as I was, you know, doing Homecoming King off Broadway, I want to do projects and work that feel authentic. And when I got the chance to pitch the idea for Patriot Act, just the ethos that I had for it is I want the show to be as real as the WhatsApp thread. Mm. I don't know if you have, like, if you WhatsApp your friends and family domestically and overseas, yeah. But the WhatsApp thread is popping. Like, you're talking about news, you're talking about culture, you're talking about Modi, you're talking about Duterte, you're talking about MBS, you're really talking about super heavy subject matter that ironically enough oftentimes gets censored around the world, but you get to be who you really are there. And so I wanted the show to almost feel like that, but to have the gravitas and the fact check and all that stuff come correct. I didn't want it to just be the WhatsApp thread that's like fake. Yeah. that part of WhatsApp that you're like, where did that video come from and why is my aunt sending it to me? But the discourse, there was so much of that discourse that was missing that isn't on page A1 of the New York Times, that there's so much of that perspective. And I wanted to bring what was otherwise relegated to the opinion page or the international news page and bring that front and center. And that's been my goal with the show.
I was just going to say, I never realized how real are what my WhatsApp conversations are, because you're just chilling and talking in there. Yeah,
but that's who you really are. Like, that's who Dino really is. That's who Amanda really is. And like, you're able to, those convos that I have with my friends around the world, I get to see people like the full person that they are. Their political beliefs, their ratchet beliefs, all of it.
True.
Do you ever get like any kind of pushback? Because you go into these industries and you unpack a lot of things about that people don't pay attention to. Like, I was just watching your fast fashion one. Right. I was so surprised about how they keep labeling all this stuff as eco-friendly or whatever, but it's really, you know, do you ever get anybody coming to you or sending you cease and desist letters or anything like that?
Yeah, so like, first things first, just huge shout out to our news producer. You know, I have some of the best, you know, researchers in the business, and I work with really, really talented folks at Patriot Act and our legal team that protects us from getting sued. So there's moments where I drink my Kanye juice in the morning and I jump up on tables and I'm like, I read the Inditex reports. I got to go at H&M and Zara. Be very careful. Like, these people are incredibly litigious. So you have to say almost, not always. Or you have to, like, they make sure my language is airtight. And so I've been protected, but yes, we tackle a lot of third rail issues, and we definitely take our swings. But again, like, while I'm doing the show, I want the show to represent that, you know, and I want to be that.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because I think a lot of the news that we're listening to now, especially because it's coming off of social media or Twitter, it's mostly opinion stuff, and it's really hard. I don't like to tout the fake news cry, but it's really hard to, when I watch news channels and I'm like, wait, but that's not the whole story. Or I read something on like the Shade Room, which is probably the first place to get news from.
What's the other one? Jasmine Brand?
Wait, you should have started with that. You're like, look, when I'm reading the Shade Room, I'm like, I don't know if the report about the Uyghurs is right.
But like, because sometimes they'll even pull stories that we do, and I'm like, that's not the full story. Like, give people. No. But it's like, they have 10, 20 million followers who are using them as Bible, so whatever they say is the truth.
It's like, yeah.
Do you find it hard to sort of convince people? Like, I don't know if it's if news. I feel like news is having a problem with convincing people that what they're saying is based on facts these days, because everybody right. automatically doesn't trust what's coming out of the news. So do you have a hard time with that?
Yeah. So I think what's happened, and this began in the early aughts and in the early 2000s. John, this was really his perspective, and I couldn't have imagined how it metastasized. He did talk about this a lot, that the 24-hour news cycle is a very bad thing because you're filling time. And a byproduct of having to fill time is that you have to fill news hours with personalities, mm-hmm. and you have to have conflict. And then those personalities become brands, and quickly something like the news becomes muddled, where you'll see a panel and you don't know, hey, is this objective reality or is this an opinion debate? I will say this though, good news is out there. There is good reporting happening. It's just that, look, when you listen to NPR in the morning, it can be boring. You know, anytime mm-hmm. someone says the news is fake, I'm like, man, Terry Gross must be so offended. Terry's been out here for decades being cogent, clear, fact-checking. I mean, anytime I listen to like WNYC in the morning or anything like that, and you listen to that international broadcast hour, it's super dry, it's super boring, and they're very, very airtight. And but unfortunately, that's not the stuff that makes this.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't get a ton of traction on what you missed on Twitter. People shouting at each other on panel shows does, and people dunking on each other. And so, look, I'm not bigger than it though. Like, my show is a news-driven opinion show. I do have a take. I am constructing an argument through it. So I think that the people like the Terry Grosses, the Nicholas Kristofs, those people deserve to be big upped a lot more because they've been in the trenches doing really great reporting for a really long time.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, those things don't trend as well as controversy.
Right.
Mm-mm. And Deadline. Let's not forget.
Yeah. Hey, look, let's just be real. There's the Deadline article, and then there's the Deadline comment section.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Loyal. We have to clearing that. We have to clear that a lot.
But that to me so represents the dichotomy between objective reality and opinion. And oh man, whoever Anonymous is, woo! Anonymous has a lot to say.
When I'm tasked to clean out those comments and they're over like 1,000 in there, it tortures me.
Yeah, especially if it's about politics or something like that. Like, it's so funny, but politics brings the race. It's not funny, but it really brings the racism out on people. Like, for some reason, I don't even know how those two could come together. But
anytime
seeing politics, it's like, but
yeah, you know, it's okay to come at me for my review of a certain show if I don't like, you know, the latest episode of Killing Eve or something like that. Yeah, we could have discourse about that. But, you know, if we present a fact, don't say we're wrong, you know. Yeah.
Wait, but, you know. Where do you get your news from? What do you usually log into?
So I'm a fan. I'll kind of just, you know, split it up amongst multiple little buckets.
Okay.
I'll do Twitter to just see what the water cooler is of discourse around topics, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. And then I'll also, what I love doing, I used to have this, is the physical paper. Because what I love about the physical paper, both the Times and the Journal, is that the news ends. Because
on God.
The news, the scroll will never end. So there's no end. Twitter has no end. What I love about both of those, if you look at the opinion page for both the Times and if you look at the Wall Street Journal, and some of the writers, they fall far on the spectrum. But what it just lets me do is it lets me not only see the news from page A1 to page A8, but then also see what are people's opinion based on that? What is Farhad Manjoo's opinion based on the news? What is their opinion based on this? What is Bret Stephens' opinion based on what's happening here? Mm-hmm. What's Ta-Nehisi Coates' opinion based on these things that are happening on pages A1 through A, if that makes sense? Okay. That helps kind of inform my opinion, where I go, okay, this is the story, and then these are people's takes or perspective on the story. Yeah.
Okay. And what when you do you have like certain topics that you haven't tackled yet on your show that you have gearing up, or how do you go about like choosing which topics you want to tackle?
Yeah, like for me, it's always been stories have fallen in two buckets. There's things that you do care about and things that you should care about. So episodes like Amazon, student loans, those are things that you already do care about. When rubber meets the road, like it's not a hard sell. Everybody's like, yeah, I'm paying Navient my student loans. I'm going to watch this. Or yeah, I use Amazon Prime every day. I'll watch this episode on Amazon. Or, you know, drug pricing and insulin. Like these are huge worlds that affect a lot of people. Then there's things that you should care about. You know, our episode about say Sudan or the elections in the Philippines. These are things that feel esoteric or a million miles away. Censorship in China. Mm-hmm. Those episodes, which ended up popping, are a little bit more work because you have to storytell more to create the world and the states.
I liked how when you were doing the marijuana one, you were like, "I'll just tell you the history."
Yeah, if you don't have time, it's pretty racist. But all right, here.
The New Hollywood Podcast is brought to you by the Apple TV Plus series Truth Be Told. When new evidence compels podcaster Poppy Parnell to reopen the murder case that made her a national sensation, she comes face to face with the man she may have mistakenly helped to put behind bars. Based on the novel by Kathleen Barber, Truth Be Told provides a unique glimpse into America's obsession with true crime podcasts and challenges its viewers to consider the consequences when the pursuit of justice is placed on a public stage. The drama series stars Octavia Spencer for your Emmy consideration. Visit fyc.appletvplus.com.
Hassan, being South Asian, how does your cultural experience, you touched on this, right, but play into your comedy? And I know that, a lot of, Asian and people of color or even queer comics use, their identity as, fuel for their comedy. But how do you kind of straddle that line of kind of being educational and teaching and entertaining rather than making the culture a butt of a joke?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, there's this really great writer named Mallika Rao. She wrote a really lovely thing about the show in The Atlantic, and she said the show feels like I'm welcoming you into my living room. Mm-hmm. And I was very kind of her to write that, because that has been my intention of the show. I've tried to the best of my ability, be a good faith actor and a good faith interviewer, even when I'm interviewing people that I may disagree with. Like, for example, the interview I did with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, there's things that I questioned him about in regards to the Saudi arms deals or his position on climate change, and if he was doing enough. I've always approached it from, hey, I'm going to be an empathetic and optimistic good faith actor. I'm mm-hmm. not going to come here assuming that you're a bad person or that I'm going to try to quote unquote get you or trap you. I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond, and I'm not trying to screw you over through the edit and stuff like that. And so that has been my approach, and I think that's translated. Some of the nicest things that have happened to me, if people have come up to me in the airport and they're like, man, I disagree with you, but I think you're cool. Like, I don't like your politics, or I disagree with your position, but I think you're a nice guy. And I think that is kind of missing from modern discourse, especially in this country.
We can
disagree with one another, but we can still approach each other with a level of civility, and it doesn't have to be absolute hatred or you're a part of my tribe.
Definitely.
Cool. And I have to say, like, when I watch it, it seems so, like, I mean, you come off like you're talking to this person, and you're really trying to give this person the hard facts, and not, it's just, I don't know, I felt it was really, especially the student loan debt one, I was like, this is really for me. I felt it was really personal somehow. It just felt like you were talking to me. you had your comedy special, Homecoming King, which it was a
That Homecoming King could be the prequel to Homecoming, Beyonce's Homecoming.
You know, Beyonce saw that and was like, okay, I can do this better.
Well, at least if
she people, did, and she did.
People search Homecoming on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah. Both of them pop up. Both pop up.
And it's Beyonce, so.
Double feature.
So what, are you planning on any more comedy specials? And what other things do you have coming up that you can talk to us about?
Yeah, so, you know, we have the new season of Patriot Act right now, yes. Every Sunday. Knock on wood, tentatively, the White House Correspondents' Dinner is still planned to happen in August, at the end of August, in some shape or form. Look, the news keeps changing on what's happening and what's allowed in the world every 3 hours, so I don't know where that's going to be. And then, yeah, I had a tour planned in the fall of working on a new special, the next one-man show, and I'm really excited about that stuff. So, but again, look, so much is up in the air and pause in the world. So
you don't know what's gonna happen. Yeah.
So is your tour was already planned for fall, but are you gonna? That's still in limbo, or
I think we're gonna push to 2021.
Okay.
I think that's gonna happen, but I think for now I'm gonna put all my creative energy in every Sunday, you know, doing our episode of Patriot.
Yeah.
Go.
Cool. Okay, so we like to wrap up this this talk with this thing we call the facts, the FAQs, just fun questions that we like to end with. Yeah. So your first question is, what was your first live comedy show you remember attending?
Okay, so this was at the Sacramento Punchline. Whoa, a lot of judgment there, Dina.
Was it? I was just like, okay. I think I just have a judgmental face, sorry.
You know, that okay, the tenor and the tone of that okay is showing me that you're not a good faith actor. You're coming in hot with the opinion. You're leading with opinion.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
I grew up in Davis. It was the only comedy club, it was the closest comedy club nearby. It was an open mic. It was open mic night. It was on Tuesday night. And I remember I had to order, you know, you have a two drink or two item minimum. I don't drink. So I had to order nachos and a Coke. And I didn't know. I sat alone up front and every comedian ripped on me. But it was actually really inspiring because I was watching the show and I realized I was like, oh, I can be just as funny as some of these. Like there's people that bombed and I'm like, I can be as funny as that. Like I can do this, so it was incredibly inspiring. So to all those comics that ripped on me that night, you inspired me, got me a comic.
Okay, what was the last thing you Postmated, Grubhubbed, or DoorDashed?
You know, Bina, my wife, Grubhubbed. I think it was, Seamless. She was really craving cheesecake. She got 4 different slices of cheesecake from Cheesecake Factory, and we had a little cheesecake paste off. It was really
that good. Sounds good. I actually recently bought that brown bread from the grocery store.
It sounds so basic. It makes it sound so basic, but it was
no, there's nothing wrong with the Cheesecake Factory cheesecake. I'll fuck with that any day.
This quarantine, like we have to just start doing. I mean, we just did a fish fry yesterday with the family. All we did was fried catfish, but it's not even like, but it's like, oh, we're doing a fish fry, you guys. It's like, it doesn't matter. All these small
things. That sounds good too, man. I'm hungry. I haven't eaten today yet.
Okay, there's another one. Would you rather have edible spaghetti hair that regrows every night or sweat maple syrup?
Spaghetti hair every night. Maple syrup is going to be too sticky.
You're right.
What, like, already doing, you know, changing your sheets, duvet. Ugh, I don't want that maple stress.
Yeah.
Okay, if you could convince everyone in the world to do one thing at one point in time, what would it be?
Hmm. Okay, this is going to tie into our conversation earlier.
Okay.
This is a very niche thing, but hey, that thing that you want to tweet or say right now, maybe just wait to post it tomorrow.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
I think a lot of stuff that has happened where people are going at each other could have entirely been avoided had you just waited for the tornado of emotion to subside.
Mm. Yeah.
And revisit it the next day and see that it most likely was not worth it.
Yeah.
I do that a lot. There's a lot of tweet drafts in my Twitter account that I don't fire off.
That you sat on? That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of people that would benefit from waiting a day, but we won't go into that.
You know what it is? Actually, this is actually a huge shout out. This is a shout out to Lin-Manuel Miranda. How positive is Lin-Manuel Miranda on Twitter?
Yeah. I know. He's like, it's just so, it's just like a ray of sunshine. I know that sounds cheesy, but he's never negative. He's just like, oh, we're here together, another day is tomorrow. It's just like so inspiring. He's kind of like, you know, if him and Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
That's great. Him and Coach Taylor, I love it.
Clear eyes, full hearts can't lose. Yes.
Okay. What is an unpopular opinion you have when it comes to TV or film?
Uh-oh.
I like Fast and Furious movies.
Who doesn't?
I think they're ridiculous now. I mean, I loved them in the beginning. Like, I loved the first couple, but now they're all superheroes. Like, where did they get all these powers?
That's fine.
Taught them how to drive from one cliff to another cliff. Like, how do you
justice for Han? Come on. Were you upset when they? I was kind of upset that they pushed the release of the next one out, but you know, it will come out soon.
Look, but what are we sitting on? 11? There's 11 more to watch. It's fine.
Yeah. Hobbs and Shaw was on the other night, and that one's a crazy. I mean, that's canon, I guess, but it's not official. It's like a spinoff, but that one is wild.
Yeah, so. I just want them to explain how they're able to do all this stuff. Like, and now they're all working for the FBI or some type of agency. Like,
Amanda, it's true. Cool. It's based on real life. okay, and the final question that we ask,
we need things where, you know, you don't gotta think and you can.
That's
just,
true. That's honestly, okay. That's what Real Housewives are is for me.
Real Housewives is your Fast and Furious.
That's my Fast and Furious.
Because there's like 11 other, you know, if one gets canceled, there's like 11 of them.
And there's always one on, so you never have to be without a Real Housewives ever. It's great. I love it.
That's good. And our final question, we ask this to all our guests. Is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, any creator that is not in the mainstream that you think deserves more shine and more recognition by Hollywood?
Wow.
Multiple answers are accepted.
can I include people that I think are doing interesting, cool work?
Yeah.
No, anyone.
I think these are the three folks that I think are just doing interesting and unique work. I think it was so cool to see. I don't know if you guys have seen the show Never Have I Ever, but to see
Nicole
kind of really take off and see her be this, I think she's going to be this young comedic actress that is so funny, and the timing's great, and just the story arc and her swag and her attitude, it's really cool to see. And I just think she's a superstar. Someone else, this is a comedian friend of mine that has been doing interesting work for years, Fahim Anwar, really funny stand-up comedian, really funny perspective on the world. And then number three, this is a guy who's doing, I think, really interesting work in comedy out of New York, Andrew Schultz. What he's doing in the podcasting world and the stand-up world and kind of as an independent comedy thinker, he's doing really cool stuff. So those are three different types of voices that I think that are out there that are doing cool stuff. And
yeah.
Oh,
thank you so much for
yeah
today.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on to our podcast. I like the sun is like hitting you in the right. It's a very picturesque moment.
I'm getting my vitamin D right now. Yeah. I'm not letting quarantine ruin that for me.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for just being here and talking to us and doing what you do. You're doing like amazing things with the show, and you know, and. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care, guys.
Take care, you too.